Please open your Bible to Nehemiah chapter 3, verse number 15. And I hope that my excitement over this passage is contagious, because when I look at this, my visits to Jerusalem are brought back into my memory, because many of the places described here, I have walked around, I have seen firsthand, and it is just a joy for me to imagine being back there again. And by the way, again, I want to let you know, we've got another trip planned in October of 2023, so more than a year out. We are hopefully going to go again. If you are interested in going and seeing some of these places firsthand, walking where Jesus and apparently Nehemiah walked, then just check out the website, intotheword.net. Look for the hot link to the travel information, and see if perhaps you'd be able to join us on our next trip to the land of the Bible. So what we've got is the basic topography of Jerusalem is an oval-shaped city of David to the south. And then there is the Temple Mount area to the north, which the palace of Solomon and his administrative area had been part of on the south of that Temple Mount area. So that's the area that Nehemiah plans on re-walling, those two sections together. And we have been listening in as he describes the building project going on all around the entire circuit. He starts describing things up on the northeast corner and then goes counterclockwise around until he has arrived down at the southern tip of the ancient city of David. And that's where I want to pick it up again, because there are landmarks there that we know exactly where they're at. So verse number 15, Shallum, the son of Kolhoza, the ruler of the district of Mizpah, repaired the fountain gate. That's the access point to the pool of Siloam. He rebuilt it and covered it and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. He built the wall of the pool of Shiloah, that's the pool of Siloam, of the king's garden as far as the stairs that go down from the city of David. Those are the stairs that arrive at the pool of Siloam from the northwest, or in this case, they go northwest up toward the upper part of the city of David. After him, Nehemiah, the son of Azbuk, ruler of half the district of Beth-Zur, repaired to a point opposite the tombs of David, as far as the artificial pool and as far as the house of the mighty men. So we are now going up the eastern side of the ancient city of David, which means that we're going along the Kidron Valley. I've walked this several times now, so I'm quite familiar with the topography here. And what he describes is, as you go north from the Pool of Siloam area, you arrive at the tombs of David. That is, the tombs of the kings descended from David and David himself. And I believe those tombs, which have not yet been rediscovered, but eventually they will be, I think. I believe those tombs are probably near this green space area that exists between the Pool of Siloam on the south and the place where you come out of the Canaanite tunnel from the Gihon Spring to the north. And so somewhere right in that vicinity is where the tomb of David would have been. And then the artificial pool, probably a reference to some sort of pool that was fed by the Gihon Spring that was also on this side. And then the House of the Mighty Men, they probably understood where the Mighty Men met on a regular basis whenever the city of David was under David's personal administration. Verse 17, after him the Levites repaired, Rehum the son of Bani. Next to him, Hashabiah, ruler of half the district of Keilah, repaired for his district. And after him, their brothers repaired. Baavai, the son of Henadad, ruler of half the district of Keilah. Next to him, Ezer, the son of Yeshua, ruler of Mizpah, repaired another section opposite the ascent to the armory at the buttress. Now, all along the wall here, we've got regional work crews that are doing the work all at the exact same time, and they're tying in with the people next to them because this is the way to get the whole thing built quickly and closed before any objections can get it stopped again, because that's happened before. Well, the next section that we're talking about is on the eastern side of the ancient city of David, near the Gihon Spring. And the Gihon Spring is downslope of the center line of this north-south hill. And it was the only reliable source of water for the city. But because it was downslope a little bit, what they did was they did a little bump out of the wall. That is a little narrow section that went down toward the Kidron Valley to keep this Gihon Spring secure. Now, in the days before Hezekiah, the Gihon Spring overflowed through underground channels into the Kidron Valley. But King Hezekiah decided he didn't want that water available for any invaders or besiegers to have access to. So he blocked up all of those access points, those drainage points. One of them was the what's called today the Dry Canaanite Tunnel. I've been through that three times now. It's the place that water would have run out through a natural crevice into the Kidron Valley. It was through one of these types of tunnels that Joab, the commander for David, crawled with his, well, probably walked with his men by night and took over the city of David to begin with. Well, after Hezekiah's time, all of those were dried up because they stopped the access inside of that little bump out from the pool of Gihon, sending the water instead through Hezekiah's new tunnel down to Hezekiah's new Siloam pool. The name Siloam means sent, so it's the pool to which the water was now sent. So this little bump out is going to be a little rectangle that pops out on the east side of the generally north-south wall. And I believe that the word buttress here is a reference to that bump out, because it's not the normal north-south wall. Instead, it is a fortified area off to one side. Evidently, the armory for the mighty men was located right there in that same general vicinity. Verse 20, after him, Baruch, the son of Zabai, repaired another section from the buttress to the door of the house of Eliashib the high priest. So the high priest actually lives in the ancient city of David and then goes up to the Temple Mount and worships and does his work. And you might remember that he and his guys are actually working up on the north east corner of the Temple Mount, working on the Sheep Gate in that region. But his house is actually down here in the old city. Verse 21, after him, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Hakoz, repaired another section from the door of the house of Eliashib to the end of the house of Eliashib. And so Eliashib's house is right near the Gihon Spring area. After him, the priests, the men of the surrounding area repaired. After them, Benjamin and Hashub repaired opposite their house. We've seen this before. Some people volunteer for the work crew nearest their residence. And so Benjamin and Hashub are actually that. After them, Azariah, the son of Messiah, son of Ananiah, repaired beside his own house. And after him, Binui, the son of Henadad, repaired another section from the house of Azariah to the buttress and to the corner. So here we have another reference, again, to this bump out, I think, that surrounds the pool of, or not the pool, but the Gihon Spring. It would have been a little rectangular area just popping out toward the Kidron Valley along this generally north-south wall on the east side of the city of David. And so Palel, the son of Uzai, repaired opposite the buttress and the tower projecting from the upper house of the king at the court of the guard. Now, some people, I think, have gotten themselves confused here by thinking that the house of the king must be up by the temple, but not if you're thinking about the original city of David. The original city of David, David's palace, was in the northern end of the city of David. Remember, the city of David was this oval hill that the city of Jebus sat upon. And archaeologists have apparently rediscovered this palace of David, this house of the king. They're not referring it to that as that. They refer to it as the large stone structure, because they're trying to be very super technical. And until they find something that identifies it specifically as David's palace, they're not going to call it that. This is an amazing structure, and it's exactly where you would expect near the bump out for the Gihon Spring, because this large stone structure is just to the north and west of the Gihon Spring. And so after him, the Pedaiah, the son of Parosh, and the temple servants living on Ophel repaired to a point opposite the water gate on the east and the projecting tower. Now, the Ophel is the hill area north of the ancient city of David, which in Nehemiah's day was sloping up toward the temple area. Now, when Solomon built, he built his palace and his administrative buildings in the vicinity of what today we'd call the Southern Temple Mount area. All of those buildings of Solomon were destroyed. They were totally annihilated. So in Nehemiah's day, there's nothing there but the hill itself, which some people had started living on near to the temple complex, because they were temple servants. So it's called the Ophel, the hill. So between the city of David and the Ophel was the water gate. Now, why is it called the water gate? I don't know. I think it's possible that it might have been the gate through which water drained off of the street or the plaza area that was near it into the Kidron Valley. Because my best placement of the water gate would be somewhere between the great stone building of the City of David Archaeological Park and the southeast corner of the Temple Mount. So not far, probably, from where the road goes around the southern end of the Temple Mount ruins. The water gate, I believe, was directly east from the valley gate. I think they were paired up as the neck that divided the southern city of David from the northern complex of Solomon and the temple. And so the water gate is going to become important because it's one of the places mentioned in the celebration of the finishing of the walls. Verse number 27. After him, the Tekoites repaired another section opposite the great projecting tower as far as the wall of Ophel. So now we've arrived up on the area that we call the Temple Mount today. We're in that general vicinity. Verse 28. Above the horse gate, the priests repaired each one opposite his own house. Now, the horse gate, I believe, was probably somewhere along the southern quarter of the eastern wall of the modern Temple Mount. It was likely named Horse Gate because Solomon's palace and his administrative complex was in that area of what we call the Southern Temple Mount. Remember that Herod the Great built up that area to be part of a larger worship platform in his time. But in Solomon's day, that seems to have been where he put his administrative structures immediately south of the temple building itself. And we know he had horses. We know he had chariots, which means probably he brought them in and out of a certain gate. And so that's probably the horse gate that we're talking about. After them, Zadok, the son of Immer, repaired opposite his own house. And after him, Shemaiah, the son of Shechaniah, the keeper of the east gate, repaired. And so now we're talking about the gate that was immediately east of the temple itself. So the temple was probably located where the Golden City, or the Golden Dome of the Rock that belongs to the Muslim religion, is located right now. So you go immediately east of there along the eastern wall. That's probably where this east gate was. And it would have been probably a major access point from that direction into the worship area of the temple. We know that in Jesus' day, the portico, the colonnades that were on that side were referred to as Solomon's porch or Solomon's colonnades, because back in Solomon's time, there was a big built-up colonnaded area on that side of the temple plaza worship site. And so the east gate was probably part of that original design, and then it was destroyed, and now Nehemiah is rebuilding it. And these are the guys that are specifically working on it. Verse 30, after him, Hananiah, the son of Shelemiah, and Hanun, the sixth son of Zalaf, repaired another section. After him, Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, repaired opposite his chamber. So here are some guys probably working as priests or Levites in this this worship gathering area, and they're trying to build the wall closest to where they sleep, closest to where they serve. Verse 31, after him, Malkiah, one of the goldsmiths, repaired as far as the house of the temple servants and of the merchants opposite the muster gate and to the upper chamber of the corner. So now we've arrived at the extreme northeast corner again, the starting point of our circuit earlier. And so there's another gate on the east side referred to as the muster gate, which it means gathering gate or appointment gate. In chapter 12, verse 39, it appears to be called the gate of the guard. And so perhaps this was the area where the priests and the Levites gathered for their daily assignments at the temple complex, and that might be why it was given this name. And then we finish out by saying, between the upper chamber of the corner and the sheep gate, the goldsmiths and the merchants repaired. So the extreme northeast corner of the Temple Mount is worked on by these goldsmiths and merchants. And then we have now done the full circuit, and we know all the people that are involved in building up this wall all at the same time. And so everybody's working on their own little section, and they're tying in with the people right next to them. And the effect is that they will get this place built in 52 days. Verse number 1 of chapter 4 tells us how Sanballat, the enemy of the Jewish people at this point, reacted to how quickly this project is going. Now, when Sanballat heard that we were building the wall, he was angry and greatly enraged, and he jeered at the Jews. Now, he can't do anything legally against them because they have the paperwork. Nehemiah is the legitimate Jewish governor with signed documentation from King Artaxerxes that he can rebuild the walls. But Sanballat, who has kind of been the big fish in this pond, is afraid that Nehemiah is going to become the new big fish, and that the Jewish people may in fact start reasserting their control of their ancient homelands. And he's right in their area. And so he's afraid he's going to lose control. So what does he do? He jeered at the Jews. He said in the presence of his brothers and of the army of Samaria, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore it from themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they finish up in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish and burned ones at that?" So he starts making fun of their efforts. But as he describes what he's making fun of, we get more details of what's actually happening here. These guys are scavenging through the old ruins of the wall. And they're getting some of the burned stones. So they're not trying to make a brand new wall with brand new quarried stones. They are basically grabbing all of the stones that are usable from the old wall that have been scattered around, and they're putting them back in place. And there have been some of the sections of this wall unearthed, and it does seem to be that idea of putting together these smaller, some of them burned, stones in a hasty fashion to get a decent wall up, because that's the point. They need something to stop anyone from coming in and putting them back under the boot. So that's what's being made fun of. Now, remember that Sanballat has his little entourage, and one of them is Tobiah the Ammonite. So Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him. And I picture here that Sanballat has showed up nearby. Maybe he's up on Mount Scopus to the northeast of the city of Jerusalem, and they're watching the progress of the building going on down there below them. And so they start making fun. And Tobiah, he decides to be his own sort of comedian. Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him. He says, "Oh yes, what are they building? Well, if a fox goes up on it, he's going to break down their stone wall." So he's making fun that it doesn't look like a very substantial wall. Now, it really does. These guys are also trying to scare the Jewish people into thinking that this is not going to be sufficient to protect them. And some of it has been said close enough that they can hear it, because Nehemiah responds to it. Verse number 4, he does what we've seen him do on other occasions. He just starts praying. "Hear, O our God, for we're despised. Turn back their taunt on their own heads and give them up to be plundered in a land where they are captives." So basically, just boomerang their curses on them. Let it bend back around where they're the ones that end up being plundered. They're the ones that end up becoming exiles in a country not their own and having to work for people. Verse 5, "Do not cover up their guilt. Let not their sin be blotted out from your sight. for they have provoked you to anger in the presence of the builders. So God, boomerang it. Make them have to be the ones that are punished for suggesting that we're supposed to be the ones that come under the boot. And verse 6 says, so we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. So half the height, we don't know what the full height of it is, but half of it is already up by this point. So we must be 20, 30 days into the building process. That's when Sanballat and Tobiah and the other guys start taking this very seriously. When Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabs and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the repairing of the walls of Jerusalem was going forward and that the breaches were beginning to be closed, they were very angry. And they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to cause confusion in it. So now these guys aren't laughing anymore. They're seeing that this thing's going to get done. This city is going to be rewalled. And they don't want Jewish people to be in that secure of a position. So they are thinking seriously about actually attacking them, which would be a violation of the Persian decree given to Nehemiah to do this work. But they are desperate. And so here's Nehemiah's response. Verse 9, we prayed to our God and set a guard as a protection against them day and night. So he didn't stop his building project. He just simply made sure that there were guards posted all around to warn them if these guys actually showed up with the intention to attack them. And we're going to see that there's even other things that he does to basically make sure that this project comes to its completion without being stopped.